Okay, good morning, everybody. It's good to see people. It's nice to see a larger crowd, Baruch Hashem. It's a wonderful thing. I hope that we're able to continue and add on, etc. A few things. First of all, I apologize that I've been away for 3 weeks. I will be here this week, which I think we're pretty clear about. And please God, next week. I will also be continuing this topic. Then the following 2 weeks I will also be away. This is a very in and out time for me because recruiting season is in force in the place right now. So I'll be away the 2 weeks after that, but I'm sure there'll be somebody who will be here who will give an excellent share in my absence. And then the week after that, which is Hanukkah, I hope to be here. So I don't know if anyone can think past Hanukkah right now. But I will be here Hanukkah, but then the following 2 weeks I will not be here again. But once we hit January, things are more secure, but Ezrat Hashem, we're good to go till November 2023. With occasional vacation days here and there. So that's the first thing, but this week and next week, please God, we're good to go. The second thing is I've been reminded to please remind you to turn your phones off, which I should be grateful if you could please do. The third thing is I'd like to thank our sponsors for the whole of the academic year that the Shirim has sponsored for the Anidia for the Neshamas of Brana Bas Bendit and Zeli Ben Kalman. We're very, very grateful for that ongoing sponsorship. And the fourth thing is, please God, the Shir should be for Shalema, for those who are injured in today's attacks. They should have a Refu Shalema or Krova, and we should have, that should be the end of all such things, Be'ezrat Hashem. The best thing we can do is keep calm, carry on, learn Torah, and intensify our connection with Eretz Yisrael, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, we today have a two-part topic, which is actually quite difficult, but a lot of fun. Those two things are not mutually exclusive, by the way. Often the more difficult it is, the more fun it is. It's a very halachic issue, and it involves us learning a mitzvah which doesn't often get discussed. We learnt it a long, long time ago, but I'd like to look at it again now. It's a two-part series. Today we need to lay the foundations, and next week we need to give the applications, which are very practical. This, you know, the topic of these shirim is hashkafic, halachic and hashkafic issues in contemporary society. So this is a very contemporary issue. You'll see a lot, we'll run through at the beginning a few, modern day contemporary applications. But this week, remember, we're just laying foundations. And next week, we're going to look through some fascinating landmark tshuvas of the last 20, 30 years. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Avadi Yosef, and others that apply this in our complicated modern world. And the question we're asking is, to what extent are we liable, responsible for the actions of others when we facilitate in some way those actions and they're not doing the right thing? This is the sugya of Lifnei Iver, which we're going to look into in depth in a minute. And I've given you a number of examples at the very beginning. Let's have a look at these. There are around 30 examples here. I'm not going to give you any answers now. This is going to leave you on shpilkas. The point is to tease you, to get you to think. But I'd like you, as we go through the principles today, the foundational principles, think about these cases and how you think that the principles might relate to them. So let's go look at these questions. The first one is one I'm sure people have come across, inviting others who will drive on Shabbos to attend an educational Shabbaton or a family simcha. A person has relatives that are not Shomrei Shabbat and they want to invite them to a bar mitzvah. But you know they're going to drive, or we're running a Kiruv Shabbat. And the whole purpose of a Kiruv Shabbat is to reach out to people who are less observant. But the problem is, they're going to drive here. Is that justifiable? Can I justify incentivizing them, if you like, to drive on Shabbat because I feel that they will benefit in the longer term from an inspiring Shabbat experience? Difficult cheshbon. Do I have to offer them somewhere to stay? What if I know that they're just not going to do that? We'll deal with those issues. Giving directions to Jewish drivers on Shabbat. This must have happened to you. This happened to me in Golders Green. I was walking to shul one year day on Golders Green Road, and a lady with a very fancy hat pulled over in the car. She could only be going to shul with a hat like that at 9:15 on Shabbat on Saturday morning. And she stopped the car and said, "Do I know the way to Elif Gardens, which was a Reform synagogue down the road?" She's driving there. So what's my responsibility? Do I say, as it happens, I didn't exactly know the way, but do I say, of course, is my obligation to minimize her Chilul Shabbos, which means I should give her clear directions so she'll get there as soon as possible, rather than driving round and round the neighborhood, breaking Shabbos even more? Should I just smile and say, good Shabbos? Should I, what should I do? That's a very practical issue. Making Jewish drivers stop for you on Shabbos so you can cross the road. Now, that's not an issue in London, because most people who are driving on the streets in London or New York are not Jewish at all. But if you're walking around Yerushalayim or Tel Aviv on Shabbat, there's a lot of traffic. You stop at a crosswalk and the driver sees you, stops. You just cause that driver to stop. Maybe you should have waited until there was no traffic and then, you know, cross then. Is that your responsibility? They're driving anyway, but they're not stopping anyway. They're only stopping for you. They turn on the brake lights. There's all sorts of, if you want to analyze it, driving cars on Shabbos involves a lot of Chilul Shabbos. So they're going to do it anyway, but they're doing it now for you. Handing over a job, such as printing, sewing, etc., which will be done on Shabbos by a Jewish worker. You know that Jewish people are going to work at it on Shabbos. You say, I need it on Monday morning, first thing. No problem, sir. We have people coming in on Saturday. But they're Jewish. Are you responsible for that? How does that work? Mailing a letter. I used to say mailing a letter, but now mailing a letter in this country will take 3 or 4 months anyway to get there. So the chances of them being Mechal Shabbos this week are minimal, I think. But we'll see. Giving a bar mitzvah gift in a place where there's no Eruv. You brought it to shul before Shabbos. You give it to the bar mitzvah, but they're going to carry it home with them. Is that your responsibility? Yes, sir. Right, sending, I didn't put this on the list, but sending messages to people who are still in Shabbat when you're inviting them to respond. I get this question quite a lot. I want to text people, it's not Shabbos here, but it's Shabbos there. Am I allowed to do that? I know they're going to text back. What about being in a call center? You're in a call center working on Saturday night in Israel, making calls to people in America. Would you like to buy this? Would you like to do that? So, oh, you could say that most people are not Jewish. Okay, so it's fine. It's Saturday, but they're not Jewish. What if they called Mr. Greenberg, Mr. Goldfarb? Does that mean that they're Jewish? That's not so clear either. If they're under the age of 30, and there's unfortunately over 50% intermarriage rate, if they're called Mr. Goldfarb, they're probably their father is Jewish, their mother's not Jewish. Can you rely on that? Maybe it's better if they're called Mr. Goldfarb. I don't know. So that's a question that people ask as well. Hiring a babysitter or a madricha for Shabbat, so they'll be earning schar Shabbat. That's less of an issue. We maybe mentioned it in passing. Printing source sheets containing Shem Hashem, and they're going to be thrown in the garbage. You'll notice that I try very carefully not to ever have Shem Hashem on my source sheets. Not that I'm choshed that you're going to just throw them in the garbage, but they get, you know, they float around. Is that my responsibility? Buying cigarettes for a parent or a friend. Your parent says, go and get me a pack of cigarettes, but you hold that it's prohibited to smoke cigarettes, or, you know, it's dangerous for them to smoke cigarettes. Is that your responsibility to say, no, I'm not going to do it? Or can you say, no, they asked, I'll do it for them? Paying a contractor or worker who you suspect is not paying taxes? That's a very, very relevant question. Just pay me cash, or I don't give receipts, or a nusach like that. Okay, plenty of workers pay taxes, which is good, but that's an issue. Does it matter where? Is it better in Israel? Is it better in America? Is it worse? A rabbi at officiating at a wedding where the couple will not go to the mikveh. Is that the rabbi's responsibility? On the one hand, Baruch Hashem, it's a Jewish boy marrying a Jewish girl. That's a wonderful simcha. On the other hand, this marriage will not be conducted in accordance with Jewish law. Is that in any way the rabbi's responsibility? Is he complicit in a sense of giving a hechsher to a wedding where the marriage is not going to be conducted properly according to Jewish law? Or is it just not his responsibility and it's a wonderful thing they're marrying each other anyway? Renting out a catering hall for a function with mixed dancing or with non-kosher catering. I own a simcha hall and people rent it out and they say, I hope it's not a problem, we're going to have a disco. Well, I'm not going to go to the disco, but is it a problem for me that they have a disco there or, you know, something, whatever, they'll do what they do. It's not my business to ask. We'll see. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about that. Selling meat to Jews during the 9 days. We'll talk about that. What is the issue there? Selling non-kosher meat to non-religious Jews. This is a very interesting question generally of providing lunch. I put this in also in a couple of, we'll come back to that in a second. Buying food for people who are Jewish but not observant. We'll see that in a second. Selling clothes with shatness to non-religious Jews. Selling or serving food to those who will not wash or bench. Do I have a responsibility not to give food to someone if they're not going to make a bracha? Or is that itself rude? How can I not give someone a drink? Why is it my responsibility? Should I say to them, Macha Brocha? Is that inappropriate as well? Someone asked me once if we're in a school, should we all say, or in a Kirov program, should we all make Birkas HaTorah together before we learn a shir? Nobody there said Birkas HaTorah, let's say, in the morning. And they're not allowed to learn Torah without saying Birkas HaTorah. But on the other hand, if we say Birkas HaTorah together, there's nothing weirder than that. Okay, before we start the shir, we're all going to make a bracha together. That's going to make people feel uncomfortable. They're not going to come back next week. How does that work? You see how these examples just proliferate. Getting a non-kosher lunch for a non-religious Jewish boss. We used to have that all the time. And when I was a junior, the boss would say, just run down to Pret-a-Manger and get me a sandwich. And the boss is Jewish and he wants a ham sandwich. So should I say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. Okay, well, you're fired. I'll find someone else who's going to get do that. Or should I say, no, I'll do it. You know, it's not my business. You decide if you want to eat it. I'm just getting the sandwich. How does that work? Letting someone else copy your homework to get higher marks in a test. Are you defrauding the system? Is that a problem? Is that your responsibility? You're not cheating. You're enabling someone else to cheat. Selling clothes which are not sanu or giving them away to friends who are not observant. I get that question all the time. Students say, I used to wear these clothes, but I don't wear these clothes anymore. But my sister doesn't care. She's fine with them. Can I give these clothes to my sister, even though they're not sanua? Or is it not my responsibility? Smacking a child, we'll see Chazal talk about that, if they may hit back. Now, you may turn around and say smacking children generally is bad chinuch, bad parenting. I'm not getting into that discussion now. But if a child's going to hit back, that's very serious. Giving a bribe to an official, obviously that's a serious issue. Renting an apartment to non-religious Jews who won't put up mezuzahs. We can go on and on and on. Teaching Torah to, or selling Torah books to a non-Jew. Encouraging a shidduch without revealing all pertinent information. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. Selling alcohol to underage children or to those who will abuse it. Acting as a lawyer for a Jew suing in a non-Jewish court. You might say acting as a lawyer on any level is a breach of halacha, or potentially. That's a bigger conversation, which I'm happy to get into. Acting as a moil for a child who is not halachically Jewish. That's very interesting. The father's Jewish, the mother's not Jewish or Jewish. Yeah, and the kid is, and now you're a moel. Are you somehow encouraging the family to say to this kid, oh, look at who the moel was. The moel was Otzenplatz, and the child must be kosher. How does that work? An Israeli army officer instructing a non-religious soldier to shave when he'll use a razor. You're saying, you can't come on parade like that. You've got to shave, but they're going to shave with a blade. How are you allowed to do that? A religious soldier switching duty on Shabbos with a non-religious soldier, a non-observant soldier. I'm not going to do this because I'm not comfortable. I'm observant. But you don't keep Shabbos anyway, so you can do this. Is there a problem there? Now, obviously, in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, there's lots of things that even a religiously observant soldier can do on Shabbos, because it's the army and there are all sorts of heterim, but he may feel more comfortable, she may feel more comfortable switching with a non-observant soldier. Is that okay? Performing a burial on second day Yom Tov, I'm not getting into that now. Taking an animal to the vet to be neutered. That's a very major shaila. You're not allowed to neuter an animal. That's a Torah prohibition, certainly for a male animal, maybe drabonon for a female animal. I'm not getting into the whole sugi now. So you say, fine, I'll take it to a vet. But are you allowed to do that? You're encouraging them to do it. You're asking them to do it. You're facilitating them doing it. Does it matter if they're Jewish or not Jewish? Selling weapons to potential murderers. Acting it as an anesthesiologist for an abortion. You hold this abortion for... I'm not getting into a discussion about all abortion. There's obviously a nuanced halachic discussion to be had. But let's say your rabbi has said, or you say this abortion is not permitted, but you're acting in an anesthesiologist or whatever they call it in England. I think Americans anesthesiologist, anesthetist, whatever. I never remember what they say. Or a pharmacist dispensing pills which will induce an abortion, etc. So we've looked at lots of cases. You could add another 30 cases to these, but in each case it's someone facilitating or encouraging someone else to do an avera. So let's go. What we need to do is have a very clear head now and put this together block by block. This is the sugya, it's lifnei iver. Number one, here's a pasuk. Lo yisakarel cheresh, do not curse the deaf, even though they can't hear. And you might say, well, they don't mind, do they? Because they can't hear. No, you can hear and others can hear. You can't do that. And here the key is for us, the lifnei iver lo titen michshol. Now let's just translate that very directly. In front of the blind, do not put a michshol, a stumbling block of some kind. V'yareta melokecha ani Hashem. Actually, it doesn't say do not put. It says do not give. Lo titen. It doesn't say lo tasim. Do not give a stumbling block. That's important soon. V'yareta melokecha ani Hashem. And you must fear God because I am God. Again, what's that doing there? I don't need reminding every three verses that God is giving the Torah. Why does it specifically add fear God in that verse? So Rashi, if we go to page number two, Rashi jumps in and says very interesting pshat. Rashi says, Lifnei eva lo yisitem mirsho. He brings from Chazal and he says, Lifnei hasuma bedavar, in front of someone who is blind to an issue. Lo titen eitza she'ena hogenet lo. Don't give advice which is not good for them, not suitable for them. Source number two on the top of page two. Al taimer, don't say to them, mechor sadcha, sell your field. The kachla chamor, oh, did you not get the copy? Did it not come through? Yeah. Don't give an eitza she'ena hogenet lo. Al taimer, don't say to someone, mechor sadcha, why don't you sell your field? The kachla chamor, and buy a donkey. Meaning, real estate's going down. Get rid of the field. Invest in donkey. Donkey value is going up. The ata, donkey futures. The ata oikefala, but really what you're doing is you're going behind their back. The noitelet heimene, because you want the field. Now, that's malicious on some level. You're saying, but sell the field because you have an ulterior motive. You want them to sell the field because you can buy it. That's wrong. That's this Torah prohibition. What if you're just clueless? You just give advice without knowing what you're talking about at all. Is that also lifnei iver? Lots of people do that. They have eitzes on everything, right? I think you should do this. Why? I don't know. Because I just think. So we'll see in a minute how that works. But the question is, why doesn't Rashi say that the pshat is, do not put a stumbling block in front of the blind? Meaning, what if you take out a block of concrete? You walk up to somebody who is blind, walking up the street. You put it in front of them. And you watch them fall over. Now, obviously, that is prohibited on many levels. Do not stand by while others are going to suffer. No one suggests that you can put a concrete block in front of a blind person. The question is, though, why doesn't Rashi give that as an example? So look at number three. The Minchat Chinuch, who is obviously much later, is picking up on this and says, Venera, it seems to me, the Pasuk said, the Lifnei Iver, Yatzal Agamni Mipshutosh. There's no pshat at all. If you put a concrete block in front of a blind person, De'im Natan Michshol Mamash, if you actually put an actual block, Even Lifnei Iver, before a blind person, Eino Over. You're not doing this Averus. Again, you're doing others. But this particular prohibition in the Torah is not literal on any level. If you put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, that's not this. Why? So there are a number of reasons why you could say that. One is it doesn't say lo tasim, do not put. It says lo titen, which is interesting because that sounds more like you're giving them something. And number three, Rashi points out, we'll read it, I'll mention it outside Rashi now so we can get ahead. Rashi says, why does it say v'yareta me'elokecha? It says because any time that there's a mitzvah where you could claim, oh, I didn't mean that badly. You've mistaken me. I meant that advice honestly. It just worked out badly. The donkeys went down and real estate went up. You could lie and you could say that. In those averas, the Torah says, v'yareta melokecha. Because you might say that you were being honest, but God knows the truth. So you can't get away with it. Now, if it was actually someone putting a concrete block in front of a blind person, how could they ever claim, oh, I meant that quite innocently. That's obviously you're malicious. You don't need the Pasuk to say, fear God because he knows your real intentions. So that's maybe another reason why this verse doesn't include something as obvious as putting a stumbling block. But it does include giving bad advice. Look at number five. Number five is the source of Rashi in the Sifra, in the Torah Kohanim. Let's have a look at it together. Lifnei iver lo titen mirsho. Lifnei sumo bedavar. In front of someone who is not blind to an issue. The Amalach, and you come and say to them, Bat Ish Ploini, here's the Shidduch question. This particular girl, Mahi Lekahuna, is she okay for marrying a Kohen? There are strict restrictions, who a Kohen can marry, who a Kohen can't marry. Al Tomilo, don't say to them, Kshera, yeah, it's fine. Vihi Eino Ela Psula, and it's really not fine. If you tell someone they're allowed to get married to someone that they're not allowed to get married, or they shouldn't get married to, that's a terrible problem. That's Lifnei Iver Lo Yisitem Mirsho. That would apply in any shidduch advice, by the way, that where you're giving advice which is bad advice. Okay, maybe you're doing your best. If you're doing your best and you're saying to the best of your knowledge, etc., that's fine. But lying or saying something which you know to be untrue to engage, get someone into a marriage which is not necessarily right for them, then that's clearly a major issue. Now, the question is, how do you know what's right for people? How do you know what's, you know, when people say things, what do they mean? Are there people speaking in code? It's very, shidduchim is very difficult. And I only get involved when people ask me very specific, very direct questions. Meaning, ask me something like, is he a nice young man? I can't answer that question, okay? Is he frum? I can't answer that question either. Does he make his bed in the morning? I can find out the answer to that, if that's relevant. I don't know if it's relevant or not. But if you ask, the more specific you can be, the happier I am to answer. But these general questions are questions which are somewhat difficult to answer. Carry on, number two. Second line. They ask advice from you. Here's the example Rashi gave. Don't get up in the... Oh, the next one's the advice. Go get up in the morning and go out early. When should I leave for this journey? Oh, leave first thing in the morning. She kavua listim, and you know it's dangerous on the roads then. Don't say go when it's dangerous. Say b'tzaraim, or go in the afternoon, b'shvil she's tarev, and then you know they'll get overheated, dehydrated, whatever. Al tamil la mechor et sadcha. This is Rashi's example. Don't say sell your field, v'kach lecha chamor, and buy a donkey. That's okay for 11, you really go behind their back, v'not le mimenu. Shema toma, maybe you'll say, I did my best. I was honest. I gave him the best advice I could. Harry Hadava Masur Alev. It's all in your mind. You know what's right. As it says, God knows inside your mind. You can't lie in front of God. He knows the correct advice that you're really giving. Okay, fine. I can with advice. But for our purposes, it goes one stage further. If you look in the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he brings the next level, which is also in Chazal, which is, what if I didn't give bad advice, but I encouraged someone else to do an Aveira? How does that work? Number six. HaMitzvah Reish Tzadites. Mitzvah number 299, says the Rambam in his Sefer Mitzvot. The Torah's wanders. Milhachshil Katsasnu is Katsasnu Be'etzah. From giving bad advice to other people. And we'll see, it's not just Jews, to non-Jews as well, if it's something that's bad for them. We'll see that in a minute. If someone asks you for advice in something which you're tempted to give bad advice, the Torah tells you not to give that bad advice. Aval, rather, tiyashrehu, you should give them the straight advice, el hadava, shetachshuv, shehutoiv, v'yashar. Give them the best advice you possibly can, that's a Torah mitzvah. V'hu amru yisalev, alifnei iva lo titin michshol, lo shon esifra, alifnei sumo v'dava, hayanoitzev mimcha eitza, al titin lo eitza she'eno gen isloi. So far, everything we've done. Give good advice. Then he goes further. V'lav ze amru, and about this prohibition, the rabbi said, shehu koilel gam kein mi sheyazor al aveira. And the rest of the shiur will be focusing on that. There's a Torah prohibition to encourage someone else to do an aveira. Why? What if they're doing it on purpose? What if they don't keep kosher? They know it's a ham sandwich. They don't care. It's not like someone who asked me for advice and they relied on me. This person knows that it's prohibited. Why is it my problem? So he'll say in a minute, or you saviv oisa, or you give them the context, kihu yavi ha'ishahu she'ivra ta'avaso, that this person who has been blinded by their ta'ava, and that's very much the Rambam l'shitato, he says deep down he really wants to keep kosher, but his yetzer hara has blinded him or her to want to eat the ham sandwich, and you're taking advantage of that. So his taiva is blinded, ein sichlo, v'chazar iver, and he's now blind. V'fateyu, and you're tempting him. V'yazrehu lahashlim aviraso, and you're tempting him to fulfill this avera. Or yakin loy sibas avera, or you're giving him the ability to do the avera. That's also prohibited. U'me'elu apanim amru, and that's why it says, b'malve v'loyve, Beribis, if you lend or you borrow on interest, shnehem yachad over mishum lifnei iva lo titen michshol. If I lend on interest, that's the prohibition of lending on interest. If I borrow on interest, that's the prohibition of borrowing on interest from another Jew. But both of them also do the prohibition of making the other one do the thing that they're doing wrong. So if I borrow on interest, I'm causing him to lend on interest, which is a second prohibition. And if he lends to me on interest, he's causing me to borrow on interest, which is a secondary prohibition. And we'll see that the lawyer is responsible for all of them. because they're drafting the document. We'll see that in a minute. So it goes in both ways. Each one of them is giving the grounds for the other to do the avera. Udvarim rabim ma'oid. And there are so many cases of this, says the Rambam. Mizehamin of this type, Yomru Behem, of which the rabbis say, Oivim Mishum Lifnei Ivalosis Mishal. This is a major life issue, a major mitzvah that people don't think about. Upshita Dekra, and the obvious pshat in the Pasuk is, B'mashiz Keren Techila, what we had said about the advice. Interestingly, even the Rambam says, pshat in the Pasuk is not the concrete block in front of the blind person, because that's not this particular Avera. But the pshat, the simple, the superficial meaning, is giving advice, but this issue of an Avera is very serious as well. And the rabbis gave us certain examples of this, which we'll see right now, just two examples in the Gemara. Number 7, the Tanya, Lifnei Iva Lo Yitzim Michshol, B'makel Ebnoi HaGadol HaKosav Matabar. The Pasuk is talking about someone who hits their child who is already old enough to hit back. Now, hitting a parent is a capital crime. So if the parent causes the child to do that, then that the parent is responsible for that. We'll ask in a minute, what's responsible mean? In what way are they responsible? By the way, how old would a child have the chutzpah to actually hit back? So the Gemara says around 17, 18. Before that, they wouldn't have the chutzpah to hit back. Okay, so maybe that's changed today. People have more chutzpah than they used to. Maybe I'll open a window. But that's one example it gives. Or, number 8, have a look here about the Malveh and the Loiveh. Number 8, over on the page 3, hopefully you've got page 3, says the Mishnah, Ve'elo Oivrim B'loisase, the following people are doing a prohibition when they lend on interest. Ha'Malveh, the lender. Ha'Loiveh, the borrower. Ha'Orev, the guarantor, who's also there helping them do it. The Ha'edim, and the witnesses. The Chachamim Omrim and the rabbis say, Af HaSofer, even the scribe, meaning the lawyer, the person who is drafting the documents. Over in Mishim, what are they over on? Lo Titen, you can't give on interest. Umishim Artikach Meitz, or don't take on interest. Umishim Lo Tiyeh Lo Kenosha, don't be a lender on interest. Umishim Lo Yisasim Alav Neshach, and because of that prohibition, Umishim Lifnei Iver Lo Yisitem Mechshol. Okay, so we know there's an issue of Lifnei Iver. Whenever a person causes another, we'll see some limitations in a minute, to do an Avera, they're also doing an Avera. So let me ask you, which Avera are they doing? If you cause somebody to do something wrong, what is exactly that you're doing? So there are three possibilities. Do we say, let's say somebody sells a gun to a murderer and they commit a murder, God forbid. The person who sold that gun, are they a murderer? Did they also commit the sin of murder? Probably not. Because they facilitated, but that's one option. Or do we say, Lifnei Iver, this is really in the Lomdus, is it an Isser Klali, a general prohibition, or is it an Isser Prati? What do I mean by that? Up in Shamayim, in the pocketbook, in the kind of cheshbon of what Averas people do, whatever that means and however that works, is there a little section in every Avera of Lifnei Iver? Is it specific to each Avera? For example, eating kosher. There's a prohibition to eat treif, and let's say there's a subset of that prohibition to cause someone to eat treif, but it's part of the prohibition of keeping kosher. And there's a prohibition of murdering people, and there's a subset which is the lifnei iver bit of that mitzvah. In every mitzvah has its sort of lifnei iver subsection, and if I do lifnei iver, then I'm breaking that mitzvah, but in the kind of subsection. Or do we say lifnei iver is a completely separate thing? Up there in Shamayim, there's another mitzvah. It's got nothing to do with eating kosher, murdering people, wearing shanis. It's called lifnei iver. Whenever you do something which causes anyone else to do an avera, that's lifnei iver. Yes. We'll see that right now. We'll see that right now. Okay, we'll see that right now. Exactly your point coming up in the Gemara. But before we get to the Gemara, just let's look at that sort of more theoretical point. Is Lifnei Iver a separate thing or is it a subset of the others? What would be the practical implications? Well, let's say I encourage someone to do a rabbinic prohibition. Did I commit a rabbinic prohibition of Lifnei Iver or did I actually commit a Torah prohibition of Lifnei Iver? Irrespective of whether what they did is rabbinic or not, because I gave them bad advice. If I even give them bad advice to buy real estate when they should be buying donkeys or the other way around, that's also bad advice. It's also a Torah prohibition. So maybe it doesn't make any difference what their prohibition is. It's my fault on a Torah level. John, what were you going to say?
Just
let him have it. Right. Of murder. Really? How interesting. Let him have it was considered to be a murder in and of itself, rather than an incentive to murder. So that would imply, if that was the case here, that lifnei iver is a kind of murder. And let me give you an interesting example. A person, God forbid, has to die rather than commit one of the three big averas. Yeah, cardinal, if you like. Murdering, idolatry, or immorality. Does a person have to die rather than commit lifnei iver on one of those things? If someone says to you, I'm going to put a gun to your head. If you don't, I'm going to kill you if you don't sell a gun to that murderer. So do you turn around and say, okay, I can't do that. It's lifnei iver of murder. It's like murder. You have to kill me. Or do you turn around and say, okay, I'll sell a gun to him. It's prohibited. It's lifnei iver, but that's not one of the big three. Lifnei iver is its own thing. So you'll see there's all sorts of practical applications. There's a lot of discussion about that, which is not for now. We don't have time for that now. If you're looking for more on that, Rabbi Kiva Eger talks about it. Rabbi Chon Wasserman talks about it. But that's one of the big conversations in more of the technical lomdas as to how lifnei iver works. But your question over there, sir, is exactly the point that I'm coming to right now. Look at number nine. There are limitations on this, and intention is a big one. Look at number nine. Rav Ashi Havalehahu Abba. Rav Ashi had an Abba. Abba doesn't here mean a daddy. Abba here means a forest. He had a forest, little copse of trees. Zavne le b'nei Nurin. He sold it to these b'nei Nura. B'nei Nura were an idolatrous sect that worshipped fires, that lit fires to their the idol. So they asked him, Amale Ravina, Ravina said to Rav Ashi, how can you sell wood to these people? They're going to go down the road and light their Avodah Zarah. You're responsible for that. By the way, you see very clearly, lifnei iver applies to Jews and non-Jews. You're not allowed to cause a non-Jew to do idolatry or to murder people. Obviously, you're allowed to facilitate a non-Jew to eat a ham sandwich, because they're allowed to eat a ham sandwich. But in this case, he says, how can you do that? So Amalei, he says to him, what are you talking about? Rive eitzim lahasaka ninu. Most wood is for fuel. Meaning, if I sell wood to people, most people use it to keep the house warm. Maybe they'll go and worship an idol. Come on, maybe they will. It's possible, but I don't have to be responsible for that. Most people, in this case, buy wood for firewood. It's fine. So in your case, people come with gun licenses. You know, in America, there seems to be, people think there's a God-given right to own at least one or two weapons. Apparently, there are 120 weapons for every 100 Americans. Okay, that's a statistic. So you can say, okay, you know something? They need to protect their property against, I don't know, whoever. And if they go, God forbid, and commit a crime, you can say, well, what could I do? They had a license. People buy guns for legitimate reasons. Most people maybe buy guns for legitimate reasons. I don't know if you could say that or not say that. But in that case, certainly Rav Ashi said that's one thing. Number 10 is also very interesting. Says the Gemara Levona. What's Levona? Incense. Some incense that they sold. Are you allowed to be a spice trader? But some people will take the spice and use it for Avodah Zarah. Moichrim lehem chavila, you can buy, you can sell it wholesale. This is a source of why Jews should be in wholesale rather than retail. Okay? You can sell it wholesale and buy in big packages. The leichash dilma azil umazabin lachrini umakatri. Maybe the wholesaler will sell it retail to people who want to do Avodah Zarah. So Amar Abaya says, not your problem. Alifnei mefakdina. You are responsible for lifnei iver. Alifnei delifnei loy mefakdina. You're not responsible if you're too many links down the chain. You're going to sell it to a wholesaler who's going to sell it to a re... That's not your responsibility. You didn't do anything wrong, which is interesting. How do we apply that to the causation? You know, how far am I allowed to help somebody to load their shopping? There's somebody struggling with their shopping, an elderly person, and they want my help taking it into the house and putting it in the refrigerator. But it's full of non-kosher food. So I'm facilitating this person to eat non-kosher food. But am I really? Or am I just helping this person to put the food in the fridge? Is it lifnei iver or is it lifnei de lifnei? Is it too far removed? A rabbi is officiating at a ceremony. And he's saying, mazel tov that you're getting married. She's not going to go to the mikveh. Is that lifnei iver? Is he facilitating the woman not using the mikveh? Or is he doing something which will cause something which is too far down the line? That's a question we're going to have to ask. Also, what if I'm helping someone to do lifnei iver? That might be a problem, right? In this case, the wholesaler, he's selling to a non-Jewish wholesaler. That's fine. The non-Jews are not prohibited in Lifnei Iver. What if I sell to a Jew who is going to sell to somebody? Maybe that's more of a problem. Because I'm not doing the Lifnei Iver of murder or eating the ham sandwich, but maybe I'm doing Lifnei Iver on Lifnei Iver. That might be a problem. That might be a different case, but we'll see. But the classic case is number 11. Number 11 is the Gemara that we need to get into, and this is going to take us to lots of fun places. A Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Iboilu. So here's the following question. The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah said that a certain number of days before a non-Jewish festival, you're not allowed to sell a sheep to a non-Jew. Why not? Didn't say in the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to say, why not? Iboilu. They asked the following question. Mishum harvocha. Is it because they're going to make a good deal? They're buying a sheep from you now and they're happy. Obviously, the buyer's happy. He made a good deal. He's going to run to church or to the Avodah Zarah and say, thank you to the Avodah Zarah. You helped me get this cheap, really, this sheep cheap. Okay, good value sheep. And thank you, God or gods or whatever it is. Is that your problem? You're causing this person to be thank their Avodah Zarah? Or Dilma Mishum Lifnei Iver Loisitim Michshol? Or is the problem, no, I don't care what he says in church or Avodah Zarah. That's not my responsibility. But I'm giving him the sheep that he's going to use for the Avodah Zarah. Is that my problem? That's Lifnei Iver, right? I'm selling him the sheep that he needs to bring. Fine. Even though he's not Jewish. Says the Gemara, L'may nafkamina, why do I care? It's prohibited either way. So you're asking me, is it because they're going to thank their idol, or is it because I'm... No, there is a nafkamina. There is a practical difference. De'is le'behema ledidei. And this is going to open up for us a whole raft of new ideas. Let's say he already has a sheep. I'm just selling him another sheep. So it sounds like if he had a sheep already, then I have no problem selling him a second sheep. Because even without me, he could have easily done this thing wrong. I'm just giving him another one. Let's say I'm working on the checkout in a supermarket, and a Jewish person comes with a leg of ham, yeah, whatever, and says, please, you know, put this through for me. And I say, oh, you're Jewish, I'm not going to let you. But one second, he could just go to aisle 6 and do it with the person there who couldn't care less, because either they couldn't care less, or they're not Jewish, or they don't understand anything that's going on. The fact that they could do it somewhere else, sounds like this gets me off the hook. If they could get it somewhere else, then it's not my problem. I'm not making it happen. So the Gemara challenges this. One second. Are you serious? You're telling me that if he has one of his own, it's not a problem. Are you telling me that's not a problem? Don't we have a classic case? I'm a Rebbe Nosson. Rebbe Nosson says, "Minayin shelo yoshid adam koshel yain lenazir." This is the classic Gemara case. A nazir, a man or a woman who has decided they want to be a nazir or a nazira, some kind of vow that they take that they're not going to drink wine amongst other things. Why am I not allowed to pass a glass of wine over to a nazir, or eva minachai lebnei noach, or eva minachai to a non-Jew, a limb from a living animal to a non-Jew? Remember, we had a discussion some time ago, whether a Jew is allowed to sell eggs to a non-Jew. Do you remember that discussion? The Chasam Sofer has an entire tshuva on the question of whether eggs are really eva min achai. Now, for a Jew, we know for sure that eggs are kosher. How do we know that eggs are kosher? How do we know that eggs are kosher for a Jew? Even if they are eva min achai, there's a special exception with eggs. Because it says in the Torah, if you would chase the mother bird, if you want to eat the eggs. It says you're allowed to eat the eggs. But non-Jews don't have that mitzvah. So maybe eggs are off the menu. Maybe you're not allowed to be an omelette chef in a non-Jewish hotel. Okay, I'm not getting into that now. Is that Lifnei Iver? You can look that up yourself. If you're planning to be an omelette chef in the next few days, please ask your local Orthodox rabbi. It's basically fine. But the Chasam Sofer wouldn't be happy about it. Okay, so you're not allowed to do these, give a wine to a Nazir or give Eva min achai to a non-Jew. Tamid Loma, how do you know? Lifnei Iver Loisit Mikshal. Ah, the ha'acha, the lai yavin alai. And if you don't give him a glass of wine, ihu ka'avar b'shem Lifnei Iver Loisit Mikshal, how are you going to do the prohibition? He could just get a glass of wine from someone else, no? Okay, so you say, I'm not going to give you a glass of wine. It's okay, so forget you, he'll give you a glass of wine. I go to the bar and get a glass of wine. The implication being, even if they can get it somewhere else, you're still responsible. Because couldn't this Nazir just get a glass of wine somewhere else? Says the Gemara, no. What are we dealing with here? And this is a famous line that you'll need to remember for the next week as well. Betray Ibre Nara. You're on two sides of the river. What does two sides of the river mean? The Gemara is setting up a case where this Nazir cannot get the wine other than through you. He's standing on one side of the river and saying, oh, I'm chalashing for a glass of wine. I know I'm a Nazir, but I can't resist anymore. Please pass me a glass of wine. And you say, okay, two sides of the river, meaning without you, they're never going to get the wine. And by the way, the Gemara is implies here, it says, lo yoshit. You're not allowed to hand over. Lo yoshit is to kind of hand over like this, rather than says to give. So what's the conclusion of that Gemara? The conclusion of that Gemara is, if they can get it somewhere else, it's not your problem. The case of the Nazir was where he can't get it somewhere else. The case of the Avodah Zorah was where he can't get it somewhere else. But if they can get it somewhere else, it's not your problem. If that's the halacha, then we've answered almost every question here already. You know, if I don't do it, then someone else will do it. The rabbi says, can I officiate at this wedding? Well, if I don't do it, then they'll just go to another rabbi down the road and do it. Maybe they'll go to a reform rabbi and do it. Maybe that's worse. Selling non-kosher meat to non-religious Jews. If I don't sell it, then someone else. If this is true, then 95% of my Lifnei Iver questions have dissolved and it's just not my problem anymore because they can get it somewhere else. Okay, if life were that simple, things will be easier. But it's not quite that simple. Let's have a look. Let's carry on. Because if you look in number 12, this is where it starts to get a bit difficult and we'll see the Shulchan Aruch in a minute. There are two sources in Tosfos. Tosfos gives two cases. One is a case of Avodah Zorah to non-kosher food to an apostate Jew. Back in the day, in the 12th, 13th century, there were Jews who had become Christians. They're not interested anymore. They don't keep kosher. They ask you to sell them a piece of meat. So are you allowed to sell them a piece of meat? Now, according to the Gemara we just learned, what would the answer be, yes or no? Yes, and that's what Tosfos says, number 12. Minay shelo yoshit adam kosher nazir. Ah, well, lefizeh. According to this, number 12, Asur lahoshid lemumarim la'idus kavin davar issa, then it sounds like you wouldn't be allowed to give over prohibited food to an apostate Jew, aflp shehu shalahem, even if it belongs to them. Pass me my own piece of meat. Ki adav yadua sheochlenu, if you know they're going to eat it. V'hu nes alahem likil Israel, and surely they're prohibited to the Jewish to eat non-kosher food. Ki Israel gomer, like any other Jew. Just because they're an apostate, it doesn't mean that they're allowed to eat pork. So how is it that you're allowed to do it? Well, Mairi, because it only applies the b'kai b'makom shelo yuchal likach im lo yoshit lo. It's only your problem if you're the only source. U'kedemasik kai betray ibn alara. In all cases, it has to be two sides of the river. You're this apostate Jew. If they can't get it from you, they'll get it from somewhere else. So absolutely right. You don't have a problem. You can give them the meat, even their meat, even your meat, anybody's meat. It's not your problem because they can get it somewhere else. Okay, sounds nice and simple. The problem is we have a problem in Shabbos. Look in number 30. There's a case in Shabbos. If you remember the Mishnayos, this one is a bit of a complicated Gemara. If you remember the Mishnayos at the beginning of Shabbos, the Mishnayos at the beginning of Shabbos are talking about somebody handing over from this domain to that domain, or from that domain to this domain. And there are different cases if you hand it over, if you take it, if you give it back, etc. So have a look in number 13. Bava de Reisha Pota Umuta. So the case is the Gemara gives one case, which he says is absolutely fine. Let's say I'm standing here in a house with my hand out like this, okay? And I'm holding anything, a cup of juice or whatever. And this Jewish person standing outside, and they stick their hand in, and they pick it up, and they take it out. There's no Erev, obviously. So the Gemara said there, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's completely permitted for me to stand here and watch them take this piece, or this cup, or whatever it is, this piece of food, and take it outside. No problem at all. Okay, it says Tosfos, the im timer. Why don't you say ka'ava mishim lifnei iver loisit mishol? Why is it not lifnei iver? Why don't you have an obligation to stop them? They're about to break Shabbos in front of your very eyes. Why don't you have to stop them? So the Tosfos says no. even if you say that they could have taken it without you, maybe you're holding one cup, but there's another cup right next to you. They could have taken that cup or your cup. It says that doesn't, even that doesn't quite get you off the hook. The loy ava mishum lifnei iver, that wouldn't technically be lifnei iver. Why? The Moshe Kosyana Nazim Okila Beperikama the Batechavodis Kahavim, he brings the Gemara, the Kaiba Truvi Erid Trey Ivridanara, because that you're only prohibited if they can't get it other than through you. Even so, says Tosfos, Mikol Makam Isura de Rabbanon Mihu Ika. There is still another layer of Isur de Rabbanon, Shechayev Lahafrisho Mi Isur. Now, this is a new thing which we'll see coming in. Even if there's no technical breach of Lifnei Iver. Why? Because they can get it somewhere else. I still have a responsibility to stop other people from doing Averus. Don't I have any responsibility? This is called the rabbinic prohibition of Messiaea, aiding and abetting, aiding other people to do Averus. So again, now we're dealing with a situation which is, okay, Lifnei Iver, I've checked, there's no problem. Why? Because they can get it somewhere else. But can I just stand there while the guy breaks Shabbos in front of my face? I don't have to say anything. I don't have to say, Shabbos, don't do it. Don't, you shouldn't do it. Think about it. I can just stand there and let them break Shabbos. It says, no, chas v'shalom. You can't just stand there. Even if they could get it somewhere else. So I don't understand. So which is it? Do we really say that if they can get it somewhere else, you're off the hook? Or do we say, no, you're still on the hook for this second level of I have an obligation to stop people. So maybe some kind of a tochacha. In the mitzvah of tochacha, I have an obligation to give rebuke, to say something, not just to stand by while people do averus. So it seems to conflict. These tosfasim seem to conflict each other. One seems to say, nah, let the non-religious apostate Jew eat his pork. Not your problem. If he doesn't get it from you, he can get it from someone else. And the other tosfas says, no, you can't just stand there while someone breaks Shabbos. How do you put these together? And that becomes the fascinating discussion of the next 5 minutes. Because look at the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, who you really want to give you a nice, easy, straight answer, doesn't quite do what you want. Look at number 14. Here's the Shulchan Aruch. This is where you're going to look it up. Lifnei Iver says the, first of all, Rav Yosef Karo. So as you know, Rav Yosef Karo, for the Sfaradim, writes the one part of the Shulchan Aruch. He says, Dvarim Shehem Miyuchadim Lemin Mimine Avodes Kachavim. Anything which is specific for Avodah Zarah. Sheba Oysam Akam, which in that place you know people worship that. Asar Limka La'ove, Ovde Oysa Avodah Zarah. You're not allowed to sell it to those specific idol worshippers. Sheba Oysam Akam, in that place. Finished. Even if they could get it somewhere else, he doesn't say. He doesn't bring down the distinction whether they can or can't get it somewhere else. Says the Shulchan Aruch, if they're going to worship Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to help them to do that. Period. Comes in the Ramah. Look at this Ramah. This is a classic. V'yeshomrim, in the, you know how it works, the Ramah is Rav Moshe Isserles, who is in Poland around the same time. He wrote to Rav Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and said, oh, I was writing the same book as you, basically, and now you've already published yours. Don't forget, the Shulchan Aruch lived in Sfat, you're Rav Yosef Karo, and the only publishing house in Israel was in Sfat, just down the road from his house. So he managed to publish the Shulchan Aruch very, very quickly. And Rav Moshe Isserles, there's a whole story. Someone presented Rav Moshe Isserles in Poland with the Beis Yosef, which was the Shulchan Aruch's initial work, as a gift, and said, oh, look, Rabbi, you like this book. This is your kind of book. So he looks at it and says, no, this is not my kind of book. This is my book. He just wrote this book before me. And so, first of all, he writes he was very depressed. He didn't know what to do. Someone had just beaten him to this life ambition. So then he had a bit of a chutzpahdik idea. He was a young man in his 30s. He wrote to the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo in Sfat. And he said, do you mind if we publish the book together? Which was, again, a bit of a chutzpahdik thing to say. Rav Yosef Karo was in his 70s. He was a Godel Hador. He could have written back saying, excuse me, you live in Poland? Like, you know, Poland was like living in Mongolia in the early, early days in the 1500s. But he wrote back and said, no, let's do it together. Let's publish it together. So you have the Shulchan Aruch from Rav Yosef Karo, and you have the glosses, the Haggaot, of the Rav Moshe Isserles. Normally speaking, the Ashkenazim go like the Ramah, and the Sfaradim go like the Bet Yosef, but not always. So look here, says the Ramah, Haggah, his glosses, as follows. Yesh Omrim, Now, there is another opinion. He's just told you you can't sell the sheep to the non-Jew who's going to use it for idolatry. He says, no, there's another opinion. Where it says you're not allowed to sell things that they're going to use for their avodah zarah. That's only if they don't have another one. If they have a second shepsel, not your problem. Or they can't get one somewhere else. But if they can get it from somewhere else, muta, that's fine. Mutalim karlehem koldavar. You can do whatever you like. By the way, separately, the Ramos says you can even sell crucifixes to Catholics. In Rome, it's well known that many of the shops just outside the Vatican for generations have been Jews selling crucifixes to, business is business at the end of the day. And he says, it's not your problem. If they even, and a crucifix is even better than this, because a crucifix is not used necessarily directly for Avodah Zorah, depending on how you define how you use it. But here there's a sheep. He's going to offer the sheep. Not your problem. This is not called two sides of the river. Two sides of the river is where they can only get it from you. You're off the hook. Okay, nice and simple. But the Yesh Machmirim. But there's an opinion that you should be strict even now. Oh, okay. So that's the one that says even though it is two sides, it isn't two sides of the river, then get it somewhere else. There's still another level. V'nagu l'hakel k'svar rishona. But the minhag is that we're lenient, like the first opinion. Okay, good. V'kol bal nefesh. But if you want to be careful, yachmir yatzma. You should be machmir. Okay, so make up your mind. First of all, he tells me it's okay. Then he tells me, but there are machmirim. But then he tells me, but it's okay, because the minhag is like the first opinion that we're not strict. But then he tells me, but there are people who are strict. So now I don't know what to do. Now I'm mamash like all over the place. It's okay or it's not okay. Meaning the Bet Yosef was very easy. It's not okay. The Ramah was yes, no, yes, no. So without getting into all the details, I brought you in 15 and 16, the Shach, and the Degel Mervava, who is Rabbi Cheskel Landau, have a debate between them. The Shach says, the difference is as follows. Lifnei Iver, on a Torah level, applies to everybody. Jew, non-Jew, apostate Jew. If they can't get it without you, then you're on the hook. That's your problem. But if they can get it without you, then you only have the extra level of responsibility to a religious Jew. A religious Jew, remember the case of Shabbos? You're standing there with something in your hand and someone's reaching in to break Shabbos. So you're dealing there with somebody else who maybe didn't realize they keep Shabbos. You have to step in and say, no, stop, it's Shabbos. What are you doing? There, if you're dealing with a religious Jew, so then you have this extra level. Kol Yisrael Arivim Zeh LaZeh. But with a non-Jew, you don't have the extra level. All you need to work out is, could they get it without me? If yes, not my problem. And even with an apostate Jew, maybe you don't have that extra level of responsibility. Okay, they've converted to Christianity. How much can I already be responsible for them? We've already ruled out Lifnei Iver because they can get it without me. So that's the Shach. The Degel Mervava says, no. An apostate Jew is still Jewish, as far as you're concerned. They still have to keep kosher. They don't care? Okay, they don't care, but you care. You can give pork to an apostate Jew? Just because they're an apostate Jew? Says that's not the answer. The answer is the difference is between someone who is doing it on purpose or someone who's doing it by mistake. And that's interesting. And again, plug that in to all the cases that we've been talking about. According to where they're coming from now, he's saying the following. Here's the checklist. When I'm about to do something, my boss has told me to buy him a ham sandwich in the local non-Jewish store. And he's Jewish. And he doesn't care. Is it my responsibility? Do I have to say, no, I'm not going to do it? He may fire me. He may not fire me. But even if he fires me, maybe I should be fired rather than do it. So question number one, could he get the ham sandwich without using me? Yes or no? Yes, of course he could. I'm not the only ham sandwich provider in town. He can ask another guy. He can get it himself. So Lifnei Iver, no problem. But then I have the next question. Do I have this extra level of responsibility, maybe on rabbinic level, to separate them from Averis? Okay, so now I'm asking another question. Is he eating it on purpose? Yes, in which case, maybe that's not a problem for me anymore. Meaning I've done everything I can. He can get it without me. He knows what he's doing. Meaning if he thought it was a kosher place and he wants a kosher sandwich, and actually I'm buying him a non-kosher sandwich, okay, that's a problem. Because then he thinks he's eating kosher and it's not kosher. But maybe if he knows, that's fine. So that's the kind of checklist that we're going to be going through in each of these cases. We'll see in a minute, for example, next week, if I cross the road, now you can answer me some of the questions. If I cross the road on Shabbos and a Jew stops for me on Shabbos. Is that a problem? Are they? Would they have stopped even without me? No. I mean, they would have stopped, just stand at the crosswalk if there's nobody there. I'm making them stop. So that could be a really big problem of if they ever. Meaning they really wouldn't have done this at all without me. So maybe that's a major issue for me. On the contrary, this nice lady who's asking directions as to how to get to the shul. So would she drive even if I didn't give her directions? Of course she would. She's driving anyway. She'll drive more if I don't give her directions. Does she know that it's not allowed to drive on Shabbos? I assume so. She's driving around Golders Green. She notices there's no traffic. Why is there no traffic in Golders Green? It's Saturday morning, and she probably knows. So maybe I should give her directions. Maybe I should help her say good Shabbos to her. We'll see. Yes. Okay, Maris Ein. Okay. Okay, that's a good question. Let me just deal with that very briefly. There's Maris Ayin and there's Chashad. There are two things. Maris Ayin is where I'm doing something which is permitted, but other people think it's prohibited, but since I'm a from Jew, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. Now I'll do that. For example, if I have wet clothing on Shabbos, it's a problem to hang it up to dry on Shabbos because other people will say, oh gosh, I never knew you could do laundry on Shabbos. Obviously, you know, the Kohens are very frum. If they do laundry, it must be okay. That's a Maris Ayin. You're really talking about Chashad, which is where you see somebody doing something which actually is permitted, but you think it's a Aveira, and you say, oh, look at them. Such a frummy person. They're buying ham sandwiches, and they think no one's going to know. Is there a problem of Chashad? So that's your question. So that's an interesting point. I was a lawyer, a frum lawyer in the city for many years. I had to eat in lots and lots of treif restaurants. So I had the same, you know, menu every time. I had like a cucumber cut into slices and a tomato cut in half and maybe a half like an avocado. Should I wear my kippah or should I not wear my kippah? Which is better?
A hat.
A hat? like a strimal hat? Okay, a baseball cap. Oh yeah, a baseball cap. Like, the only people who look really Jewish are people who walk around wearing red baseball caps. You know, you see this, they could be wearing the Shmoneh Begadim of a Gera Chassid with a baseball cap, and now they're invisible. No one knows they're Jewish. No one knows they're Jewish at all. So, a toupee. In my case, maybe that would have helped. But anyway, I was told I should wear a kippah. You walk in wearing a kippah, everyone knows that, you know, you're not eating a ham sandwich with a kippah on. Okay. In fact, one of my colleagues that went out for non-Jewish colleagues that went out for lunch with me quite a lot saw me for the fourth or fifth time eating like a chopped up cucumber and a tomato, and said to me, "I don't want to offend you, but you do this for religious reasons, right?" I said, "Yes, I do." I said, "You're Jewish, right?" "Yes, well done." And you keep kosher, yes. She says, "I hope this is not offensive, but if this is what you're required to eat for religious reasons, why aren't you a lot thinner?" Honesty is sometimes the best policy. I said, that's a good question. That's a good question. Come to the Kiddush at Shul on Shabbos, and
people have to use the restroom in a non-kosher place.
Okay, that's also. Okay, good. Again, you're in Kentucky Fried Chicken on Shabbos afternoon. That happened to me in LA, in Hancock Park. I was walking from Hancock Park to Pico Robertson. It's about 3 hours. I needed the bathroom. The only place was a Kentucky Fried Chicken. So should I go in pretending I'm not Jewish, or should I go in pretending I'm Jewish? And just by mazel, as I walk out of Kentucky Fried Chicken, there are 85 Beis Yaakov girls walking past going, good Shabbos, everybody. It really happened to me.
I think
kippah on is better. And there's no Eruv, which is a problem. Okay, fine. Let's just do the last case. Let's do the last case, because this is very important. Ladies and gentlemen, on page 5, let me leave you with this. This will keep you awake tonight. Let me leave you with 17 and 18, and we'll continue next week. And next week, we'll plug this into lots of practical cases. Number 17. Isha eino b'mitzvat hakafa. A woman is not obligated, says the Shulchan Aruch, in the prohibition of shaving off the corners of the hair. If a woman wants to shave off her hair with a razor or even with scissors, she can do that. No payas issues. Okay, fine. The yesh oimrim, but there is an opinion, says the Shulchan Aruch, she'afa pisha muteret lahakif peyat rosha. She can shave her own hair off. Asura lahakif peyet rosh ha'ish. She can't shave off a man's hair. Afilu hu katan, even a child who is male. Why not? She's not in the parsha. She can shave off her hair with impunity. but she can't shave his hair. So what's the problem? So Lifnei Iver, it sounds like it should be Lifnei Iver, right? She's right there helping him to have his head shaved or his beard shaved off or whatever it is in a way which is prohibited. Are you going to tell me he could have gone somewhere else? Maybe, okay, maybe it's not the highest level of Lifnei Iver, but comes along, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and says the following thing. One second, and this will open up a whole new discussion next week. If she didn't shave off his hair, he could have done it himself. If he shaves off his hair, he's doing two Torah prohibitions. He's shaving off a male Jew's hair, and he's being shaved. He's the shaver and the shavee. He's doing two prohibitions. Now she shaves off his hair, and how many prohibitions is he doing?
One.
So by helping him, by causing him to do the Avera, she's actually stopped him from doing even worse Averas. Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, is that okay? Meaning, do we kind of weigh it up? And you see, this is a very important question. If I invite someone to drive to me on Shabbos, and there's a chance that they're going to get connected through that Shabbos, they're going to become religiously excited and energized, do I take a long-term view and say, well, right now I'm getting them to do one Avera, but look what I'm saving them from. Is that relevant or not relevant? This is a very interesting question. Do you take a longer term view? There was a question in 19 and 20, we'll come back to next time, of a question that was asked to Shaila of a man whose daughter was kidnapped by the church on Shabbos. It's a real case. And the church were going to abduct her. And if he waits till after Shabbos, he'll never get her back. Is he allowed to break Shabbos in order to get her back? He has to bribe the officials. So you'll say, of course. So you'll say, well, okay, what's the heter? It's pikuach nefesh. It's not pikuach nefesh. No harm will befall her. She'll probably be healthier growing up as a young Christian woman than as a young Jewish woman. We can assume that it's not pikuach nefesh. But pikuach nefesh is not spiritual. Pikuach nefesh doesn't mean like I'll save her soul. Pikuach nefesh is physical. There's no physical danger here. So is he or is he not allowed to? Says the Shulchan Aruch, he's allowed to. But you say, of course, it's not so intuitive. I mean, intuitively, it's of course, you're right. But why? And because he says the same thing, we'll finish with this, that he's allowed to do a smaller prohibition. It's still breaking Shabbos. It's not allowed on Shabbos. It's not pikuach nefesh. It's not like giving birth on Shabbos. It's prohibited, but it's better that he should break Shabbos now to save her from becoming a Christian for the whole of her life. The cheshbon, you can weigh it up, and it's better in the long run. That's a very interesting thing. We'll start with that next week. And we plug that in. We've a lot to do, but hopefully this is complicated. But if you go over it, revise it, review it, we'll come back to it next week. Be'ezrat Hashem.